Migration Media, this is Migratory Patterns. I'm your host, Mike Shaw. Shanice Burkeen started her journey towards life overseas when she was deciding which foreign language to take in college. As it turned out, the professor with the highest satisfaction rating from students taught Chinese, so that's what she chose. After scoring consistently high grades in her classes, she decided to make it her major, and then her fate was sealed. You really can't succeed in a Chinese program without spending time in China. Far from the exoticism of the expat life that many imagine, Shanice spent her time in the trenches doing menial jobs before an opportunity rose to actualize one of her passions, veganism. Now she's the CEO of Plant-Based Consulting, a company that works with local restaurants and the vegan community to expand plant-based options and to reduce the amount of animal products consumed in the city. Today, after 5 years overseas, and after having learned so much about herself and developing so many new skills, can she see herself ever returning back home? I always love talking with fellow vegans overseas. Everyone's journeys are unique, and while going plant-based in the West is seen as trendy, in many developing countries it goes against the cultural norm. This often results in people who make the choice seeing the host culture through a unique prism. I think that you're really going to enjoy hearing this particular story. So please sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation with Shanice Burkeen. Shanice Burkeen, welcome to Migratory Patterns.
Thank you.
Where is home?
North Carolina, Durham, North Carolina.
Durham, North Carolina.
Yes.
That's where you're from originally?
Yes.
Okay. But you are not in Durham, North Carolina right now.
No.
Where are you right now?
I'm in Shanghai, China.
Shanghai, China. How long have you been in Shanghai?
About 5 years.
5 years. Is this the first place you've lived overseas?
I want to say no, but it's still a yes because I've only lived in China.
There is kind of that weird thing where it's Shanghai is China, but sometimes it doesn't feel like it. Yeah. So how did you get from Durham, North Carolina to China?
Well, basically, I studied Chinese when I was in college, and we had a study abroad program. So I just went to Beijing, China for the first time in 2010 on a study abroad program, basically.
What was the reason you wanted to study Chinese?
Well,
is there a lot of Chinese speakers in Durham?
No. Actually, there are probably a lot more. Actually, last time I went back home, there were a lot of people speaking Chinese. And I was like, I understand everything. But at the time, we just needed to take a language. And I was kind of done with studying Spanish, even though I should get back into that. But that's another story. So I saw the recommended languages by the government to study. So those were Russian, Chinese, and Arabic. And I went to ratemyprofessor.com, and the best reviews were for the Chinese professor. So I took Chinese.
I love that. You know, when I went to high school, I graduated from grammar school in 1990. So it was like the end of the Cold War. And when I went to high school, I so wanted to take Russian. Like, I went to the high school, I was visiting high schools, and I was asking them what languages they offered. And the school I went to, I said, do you have Russian? And they said, no, we don't offer Russian. I was like, oh, damn it. And they said, but we have German. And I went, I guess German's kind of like Russian, which, of course, it is not at all.
Not even sort of.
But, you know, the East Germans were the bad guys in a lot of movies in the 80s. And I was like, okay, that I can do that. They're commies. I can learn German. And I failed miserably.
Okay, well. There you go.
And that's why I took Latin, which didn't help me at all in China. So you took Chinese in college, and I would imagine that if you're in a Chinese program, you pretty much have to go to China. I mean, it's really...
Yeah. Yeah. If you want to major in it, they were like, you kind of have to go.
You majored in it?
I majored in Chinese. And at the time, we didn't have a Chinese major, so I had to do a whole make your major thing. And we didn't even have a lot of Chinese classes. So when I tell people about my experience studying Chinese at my college, I'm like, I didn't really learn like that much, probably as much as you would learn if they actually had a Chinese major. Like I was studying like Tibetan religions and like really random stuff. So yeah, going abroad was probably the best way to actually learn the language.
Yeah, you really, Chinese is this language where you really have to be in it to get it. You could take all the classes in the world, but if you're not here immersed in it, you just can never get it. This is really, like, I'm really fascinated by this. So you decided to take
Chinese as a language requirement, right? Yeah. Based on the professor rating, which I guess is cool. I mean, what other reason does there need to be? But then it turns into your major. Like, did you fall in love with Chinese?
Okay, so yes, I really did like it. It was easy for me. It was easy for me to get like pretty good grades. So I was like, oh, this is something I enjoy.
Let me just say, the tone you're using is like, I met a guy, for a week, and we ended up getting pregnant. Now we're stuck together for life. That's what this sounds like.
No, it's more like I wanted a high GPA. So I went with the classes that were easiest. Because I was also good in like my chemistry classes and my math classes. But I was like, but if I want to go to graduate school, I need a high GPA. So I should stick with the classes that give me the highest GPA.
And you were getting good grades in Chinese.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So you kind of stumbled into it and then you stumbled into a major. And then, of course, if you're going to major in it, you're going to come to China. And then, boom, you're here. So you did your study abroad and then you would have to go back to finish school. Mm-hmm. Did you know right away, like, did you decide when you were here on your study abroad that you wanted to come back?
Yes. I kind of left abruptly because I got sick, so I had to come early. So I kind of like went through a mild depression. It's funny because I've talked to other people who have had this before. It's like they leave a country and go back to where they originally came from. And it's like they feel really depressed because it's like, I had such a good time there and I don't want it to end, you know? So I kind of had that feeling. So I was like, as soon as I graduate, I'm going back.
I've never heard it articulated quite that way, which is really interesting. It's a new perspective on the migration experience. For me, my story is, I've talked about it on the show, but I basically heard a voice in my head. I don't know where it came from. And it said, go to China, young man. Actually, it said something else. But it said, go to China, young man. And I just showed up here a couple of years later. And I never really, like, I've talked about this with my wife and I've talked about it. I never thought of it as a big deal. Like, I think because when the voice first happened, it was a big deal. Like, I had to tell my friends and how am I going to tell people? And no one believed me. But after that, it took me 2.5 years, but it just felt like inevitable. Like, this is what I'm going to do and this is the right path for me. There was never like a doubt about it. And it never felt like a big change. It just was like, oh, I'm going there next. And then after a few years here, I kind of realized that my identity was shifting and I'm now a migrant. Like I am someone who thrives overseas. Like if I went back to the US, I wouldn't know what to do with myself. So this is different where you kind of just fell into it and you get over here and it kind of seduced you or something. And then you felt depressed and were you surprised that you felt depressed when you went back?
I feel like I was looking back, at the time I wasn't thinking about it, but looking back at it, I'm like, I was really depressed. Like I wouldn't go out or like do anything. I just stayed in my dorm. I don't know. Part of it might've been because the experience ended so abruptly for me. And then part of it was probably like, I really just really enjoyed it. I really have no, it's very weird.
Yeah,
actually talking about it.
Yeah, it is. Well, we don't. That's the whole point of the show. We normally don't talk about these things. So, what was the impetus for you to come back? Like, did you have a plan, or did you just say, "I'll go there and figure something out"?
So originally, I just wanted to find anything that would bring me back to China, and I didn't want to teach. That was my original plan. I was like, "I'm not going to teach. I'm just going to find anything." Yeah, it doesn't work that way because if you're not in China, they're not really going to hire you when you're overseas to do something that's not teaching because they need to make sure that you can actually do your job. So I was like, all right, me going to China and doing interviews and hoping that I get a job is probably not a good idea. So I took a teaching job and came back to China.
That's a well-trodden path. And then once you get your foot, this is actually, people have asked me advice, mm-hmm. How do I come here? And I say, just take some crap teaching job. Like really, you know, you might hate it, but once you're on the ground within 6 months, you'll find something. Mm-hmm. It's just, if you're here, I also tell people by the time you see something advertised on the classifieds or expat sites, which are not very good anyway, but by the time you see something listed, the only reason it's listed is because everyone in the company has exhausted their personal contacts. Like that's the last place they go is the websites. So what did you, I know what you're working on now. How did you get from teaching to what you're working on now? And we'll talk about what it is now when we get to now.
Okay, so my path is kind of an interesting one. So I started off teaching And because I'm so loyal, I made sure I did the one-year contract. I said, I'm going to finish my contract before I get another job. Finished it, and then I literally looked for any job that was not teaching. I didn't care what it was, and I didn't care how much it paid me. I was even looking at jobs that were paying as low as like $6,000. But I was like, well, it's in the middle.
It's like 900 US per month. That's not a lot.
Yeah. But I mean, it was, they were located so far away from the city center. I was like, I can survive. Like, I'm sure rent is much cheaper out there as well. So I ended up getting a job, which I had no idea they were going to give it to me. It was a call center job where I did translation for expats over the phone and giving them basic information about Shanghai. So if they wanted to find a hotel, if they wanted to argue with their IE, I was the one to help facilitate those conversations. We even had people who wanted to talk to a love interest. Like, there were some couples who would call in and they wanted translation.
That's phenomenal.
That was very fun.
We could do a whole podcast just on that.
Oh, yeah. I want to write a book about the stories we had at that center. Anyway, so I did that for 2 years. I really, really liked that job. However, after a while, it was sort of like, you can't really learn any more Chinese because you're getting the same phone calls over and over again. So, I mean, how many times can you tell the repairman that he needs to repaint the wall in Chinese? So I left that job. And at the time, the visa laws had kind of changed. So this is where there's like a bit of turbulence that happened at that time. I took a different job, which it was sort of like, it was basically translation. They called it MT, which is machine translations. And that company was, the thing that seduced me was that, oh, you do translation for Alibaba. Like, Alibaba was one of their clients. So I was like, oh, cool, I can put Alibaba on my resume. So the turmoil with the resume, I ended up going back home and kind of working from the US for a little while. And then I came back and did that job for 2 weeks and I quit. Because it was terrible. I think I was only able to deal with it back home because I was home and like just in my house with my own family. So it didn't feel so much like a job. But when I was back in Shanghai and had to go to an office and sit in front of a computer for 8 hours straight, I had no time to take a break, nothing. I think I had enough time to do like a short lunch break, but it was just going through translations and checking that. So machine translation is basically it was translated by artificial intelligence and you're correcting it.
Right.
So it's already the Chinese and the English are already translated. You're just saying this Chinese word is wrong. This English word is wrong. This needs to be capitalized. There needs to be a comma here or a period here. It was awful. It was the worst thing ever. I don't know what I was expecting because my test was exactly like what I was going to do, but I was still like Alibaba translation. Yeah. So I quit after 2 weeks.
You're basically helping them develop the AI.
Basically. Yeah. I'm like, I'm helping them replace my job. So I left. Another reason I left is they were being really weird with the visa. They were being very shady. And they told me I couldn't use my own agent and they were going to use their own agent. And I talked to another guy and he was like, yeah, they're just trying to like cycle through people. So they're basically going to have you on board for 2 months and then like kick you off. So you have to force them to use your own agent. I was like, you know what? I'm not doing these games. I quit. And I ended up getting another job. So at the time, it's weird. It was like exactly after 2 years, a bunch of people started messaging me on LinkedIn for jobs. I think because after the 2 year mark of being in China, it's like you're employable more easily than if you don't have 2 years of experience. So at that time, I had a contact from Bitcoin company and was basically doing social media. So I did social media for them. And my manager was like, I don't want to curse, but he was like a bad man.
You can curse.
Okay. I don't know if this is like family friendly podcast, but he was really mean. So I had never dealt with somebody like that. I learned a lot. I learned a lot about Bitcoin. I learned a lot about cryptocurrency. So I really did enjoy that experience. So I left and one of my colleagues introduced me to another guy who he had also left that company and went to another company and they also did cryptocurrency. So I continued to do social media. Then it was at this point in time that my friend contacted me and she said, hey, I'm starting a company, PVC. So this is when we get into plant-based consulting and
how plant-based consulting.
Yes, plant-based consulting, how it ties into Vegan of Shanghai. She said, I've been saving up my money and we have no investment. It's just my own savings. And I want to hire you. And we're just going to do this full time. She said the pay isn't going to be very high, but she's like, are you interested? And she said she was very nervous when she approached me. And she actually had some friends who were there like, no way Shanice is going to quit her full-time job where she's getting a pretty decent salary to get paid almost less than half of what she's making to do this job, which has no guaranteed income. And of course I said, yeah, of course I'm going to do this. Like, this sounds extremely interesting. And I was really deep into social media. So I was like, oh, I'll do all of our social media. It's going to be awesome. So that's how I got where I am now.
It's a lot of hustling. And I have to say, I admire it a lot. And you're making me think of the road less traveled, or the road that could have been traveled. Because my situation is, I got to China, I found a job, I stuck with it for 10 and a half years before I left the job. And I didn't have to do all that hustling. Like, it's kind of interesting, because when I was in my job, there were so many opportunities. I mean, I consulted with startups. I dabbled in doing a couple of my own before I got to Migration Media. And I advised people. I helped people do things. I saw so many cool ideas and interesting things happening. But I never had I never was in the situation where I had to go find the next thing so I could stay. Your story, it's so funny, because you just kept going and going and going. And I'm like, oh my God, like, you've only been here 5 years. How many more of these things are there? And I'm thinking about, well, that's so normal. Like, there's like an exoticism that people think about when people move overseas. But really, it's just people hustling to get by. But the added twist of it is, you're hustling not just to get by, but to also stay where you are. Like, you could always go somewhere. You could always go back, quote, home. But you actually want to stay, which is like another thing. And I want to get into that. But this is, let's stop right here for a second. Take a breath. Take a glass of water. And we're going to talk about that when we get back.
Hey, everyone. If you like the kinds of conversations that we have here on Migratory Patterns, you should check out Pop Abroad. Host Michelle Ibarra is on a mission to help expats and migrants live their best lives overseas by talking with the people who are doing it right now. During her first season, she's talking about community, why we need it, how we can use it to get a leg up, and how the best community leaders make theirs work. Listen in as she interviews the incredible women who are killing it overseas to hear how they are creating community in their adopted homes. You can learn more and hear the latest episode at migrationmedia.net, or just search for Pop Abroad wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back, and we were talking about the hustle you were doing. And one of the things, like I said, is so fascinating to me is because you were trying to stay where you were. Can you talk about, did you feel a pressure because you didn't want to leave? Did you, like, if you're at home or if you're back in your home country, you have to find a job to eat. Like, that's a very base need, right? But what's it like to have that other layer? Like, you could always go back to the US, but you didn't want to. So, like, what is that feeling like?
It's weird because I never really thought about going back to the U.S. because I've been here so long. It's almost like, go back to the U.S. and do what? You know, like, all your friends are here. All of your circles are here. I mean, there's that whole idea of, oh, Americans don't go back to the U.S. because, you know, we're quote unquote losers who can't find a job back home. I mean, that's not true for everyone. Some of us really just genuinely like being in China. I like the chaos of China.
It's a wonderful chaos. The thing you describe is like, you know, one thing ends and you can just like, oh, someone else sends me a lead and someone else says there's a company here. Like, it's amazing, that energy. It's very infectious and you get addicted to it.
It's nice. And I think probably the biggest reason that I've stayed in China so long is I keep wanting to learn Chinese. Like, I just want to keep improving my Chinese. So I just want to stay here as long as possible. And I don't know. It's just like, I feel like I'll never finish learning. Like, at first I had a plan, like, all right, I'm going to do a master's in Chinese, then I'm going to go back to the US and get a job in translation. That didn't happen. All the companies I started joining, I realized, like, actually I'm learning a lot of Chinese just being in a company, talking to people.
Yeah. So let's talk about PBC, plant-based consulting. This is the company you're in now. We don't want to make this an ad for your thing, but But what's interesting is that you've kind of found this opportunity that links up with your life, your passion. Can you talk about, you're vegan, right?
Yes.
Can you talk about why you became vegan and how you're actualizing that through PBC?
Okay. So I have been vegetarian pretty much my whole life. I think I went vegetarian around like 6 or something.
Were you like one of those cute kids in the videos that's like, I don't want to eat the rabbit?
It was more like my dad telling me, you know, they ripped off a chicken's leg and fried it. And I was like, no. So he was the vegetarian, if you couldn't guess.
Ah.
And my mom ate meat. So anyway, he influenced me to go vegetarian. And when I was 16 years old, I went vegan because my grandmother was vegan. And I didn't know why. I was like, what, do you just get to a certain age and you can't enjoy food anymore? Like, what is this? And I was like, you know what, let me Google it. So I Googled why go vegan and just went down the portal of
vegan propaganda.
Yeah, pretty much. I watched so many videos. I was like crying forever. And I was like, I'm going vegan. The first thing I ate, I remember, was I Can't Believe It's Not Butter, which had milk solids in it. And I was like, oh.
I can't believe it's not butter.
Yeah, I was like, I thought it was a butter substitute. Anyway, it wasn't. So,
As a friend of mine once said, it's not a religion.
It's not a religion.
Yeah.
We don't convert people.
Yeah. When you came over here, would you find it hard to stay as a vegan, or was it easy? I've often told people that it's easy to be vegan here in China because most restaurants have veggie dishes. Chinese culinary history is actually vegetable dishes that they've added meat on top of, mostly. So when you're here and you're looking for work and this person offers you to work with her on this company, well, first of all, what exactly does PBC do?
So PBC... We funnel money into Vegans of Shanghai, which is our organization, our group, our community.
So Vegans of Shanghai, can you describe this a little bit more?
So Vegans of Shanghai, we started in 2016. It started as a group that kind of separated from a vegetarian group. We just decided to get all the vegans together.
And when you say group, I assume you're speaking as most of us who have lived in China speak. You're actually talking about a group within WeChat.
Yeah, so WeChat.
Yeah, so like we don't actually have, quote, groups of people. We have these virtual groups on WeChat. It's funny that the meaning of the word group, when everyone says group, they don't mean people on the corner. They mean in WeChat.
Yes, so we started as a WeChat group.
Yeah.
And... it was just fun. Like, we weren't trying to make money. We weren't trying to do anything crazy. It was just like, oh, let's get people together. Let's have a potluck. Or let's do a curry cook-off. Let's do a curry demo. Like, just really fun stuff. And it was simple. Everyone would we'd take all the cost and split it, and everybody would pay. So it was supposed to be very cheap and fun, just a way for people to get together.
Yeah, I've been involved in a community like that in Beijing, and it's my involvement in the community can only go to a certain point because it's all volunteers and everyone is just doing things out of passion and fun. But, you know, they have jobs and lives, and you can only go so far in terms of professionalizing a group of volunteers when they have to live and work and eat. So after a little while, just couldn't – I didn't have the space where I could actually start a company, but you – it sounds like, have found a way to start a company that will let you continue to work on this full time. So how does PBC, plant-based consulting, connect with your work with Vegans of Shanghai?
So basically all PBC does is it gives us the platform and it gives us the money, even though it's not that much, it gives us the money to keep Vegans of Shanghai alive. Like there's only so much, like you just said, there's only so much you can do when it's kind of a side hobby. So my friend, now my partner, at the time, my business partner, at the time, she said, yeah, we need to do this full time. And like, we can like get the ball rolling. We can really do a lot of stuff.
Do what full time? What kind of stuff?
So the type of stuff we were supposed to do mainly was going to restaurants and getting them to reduce the amount of meat that they're selling. That's basically the underlying goal. So it is creating a vegan menu, but it's more so we want to make it so you're selling less beef. So the advocacy behind it is you're not contributing as much to animal suffering. that's kind of the idea. So part of that is creating vegan menus, getting more vegans to come in. But other parts of it is sort of like, okay, I see you have cheese in this salad. Is it possible to substitute it with maybe cashew or take it out completely? Like, so we also wanted to find restaurants that are, they kind of understand what we're doing, because it's not necessarily, I mean, it is about animal advocacy. We kind of talk more about environmentalism and reducing your carbon footprint. So restaurants, and especially like the owners of restaurants who understand the environmental impact of meat, cheese, and dairy, they're kind of more willing to be like, oh, okay, this is interesting. Tell me more about this, and how can I help you guys with this? Mm.
So you, I'm just following your thread here. So you started taking Chinese kind of on a whim. Then it turns into your major because you find out you're good at it. Then you end up in Beijing on an exchange program. You're like, hey, I like this here. And then you get back to the US and you're like, man, I really liked it there because I don't like it here. Then you come back and you try to hustle all these jobs. Then you find, I mean, did you ever think of yourself that you would become an entrepreneur?
Okay. So part of this is my dad is an entrepreneur. He started a company by... And at the time, he told me, like, everyone, no one supported him. I mean, other than his family, of course. But, like, all his friends didn't support him. And I remember just, like, seeing him. And I was like, I want to do that. Like, I want to do my own thing eventually. I was like, I don't know when. I don't know if I'll ever have the money. I don't know what age. But I eventually want to do my own thing. So the me being an entrepreneur thing, that kind of was like, oh, eventually. I didn't expect it to happen in China or, like, vegan-related stuff. But... he probably would have had me do something if I was back in the States, like start a vegan cafe or something.
Yeah. Do you find yourself, I mean, I know you really love China and you want to stay here, but do you think about, is it China specific or do you think you could go somewhere else? Do you find yourself ever thinking about going back to the US with what you've learned here?
Sometimes. Especially all the social media stuff I've learned. I'm like, I probably could go back home and like do some stuff. Social media oriented, probably vegan oriented, especially if I like started leveraging communities and talking to people. Like the stuff I do in China, I've never done in the US. So I don't know what the outcome would be, but it'd be interesting to try and see where it went.
Well, I ask because business opportunities is one thing, because as we know, just being here, there is just endless opportunity with this dynamic, growing, multifaceted, incredibly diverse economy. There's just so much opportunity here. It's addicting. Like, I remember this one point, I was looking out down the barrel of possibly moving back to the US. My now wife, when she moved here, there was a possibility she might not like it here. And I told her, if you don't like it here, we'll go back. And I had to sit down with a friend of mine. And I said to him, I don't even know where to start. Like, I wouldn't know how to find a job or where to go. And my buddy sat me down and he said, dude, do you even know what it is that you know? and I didn't, you know, and it's not that I'm smarter. It's just that I have this experience and I'm in this place and it's given me so much in terms of knowledge and perspective that, yes, if I go back to the US, there are plenty of companies that would want to hire me because I have this understanding of the market and the culture. And I learned that, but I didn't know I learned it until someone said, hey, man, look what you learned. And I assigned a value to that. Like I started to feel like, oh my God, there's like a value to living overseas. And that's kind of when my identity started to shift. I shouldn't say shift. I became aware of the shift in my identity. Like I'm a guy who lives and thrives overseas. Like this is where I do well. And I'm gaining valuable experience and valuable personality traits because I'm here that I would never have developed if I had stayed home. And the reason I'm asking, pushing a little bit about can you go back is I'm wondering if that's the kind of thing you feel. Like, do you think about that? Have you reckoned? You've only been here 5 years, but you've done more in your 5 years than I have in my 10 and a half, just all the different experience you have. Like, are you aware of that different kind of perspective you have? And do you find that you want to develop more of it? Or do you find yourself like, I wish I could go back, but they keep dragging me back in? Like, is it that time? Like, which one is it?
I guess it's a little bit of both, because I mean, I kind of think of the stuff I've done, and I mean, I have sat down like, what exactly would I even do when I go back? Because I don't want to do translation. I've already been down that road and I didn't enjoy it. Because part of me still feels like I need to go get a master's or something in translation or interpretation in order for me to go back to the U.S. comfortably and say, I can do this professionally. Because I've done a lot of stuff kind of like, what's the word? It's sort of like I've learned it on the job. I haven't like been properly trained, I guess. So that's the only thing that
you don't have a credential.
There we go. I don't have a credential. I can do it, but like for example, I do graphic design and stuff for PBC right now. I have absolutely no experience. It's literally just getting frustrated with Photoshop and then figuring out how to do something because I have to keep doing it. So you eventually find a way to do it faster. And I was like, oh wow, I can actually like do graphic design, but I wouldn't go back to the U.S. and say, I know graphic design.
That's such a thing that is different about the U.S. than it is here. People just want to know, what can you do? Mm-hmm. In the U.S., they want to know, what's your credential?
Yeah.
What are you qualified for? And you could say, well, I've done this. They say, well, it's not on your thing here. It doesn't list that on your coursework or whatever. But here in China, it's just like, oh, can you do this thing? We need someone to do this thing. I can do that thing. Okay, you do the thing. And if you do well, we'll pay you. And if you don't, we'll just find someone else.
Pretty much.
That's kind of how I got my job.
Yeah.
We need someone to do this thing. I can do that thing. I always confuse myself when I want to talk about this because I don't tell people, like, some people are looking for something when they move overseas. And some people are on this quest to find themselves or whatever. And what I tell people is that I didn't come to China to find myself, but I didn't know I found myself till I got here. You know, I knew who I was, but I didn't understand what that meant until I was able to come here and I had more freedom to explore all the facets of myself. And it sounds like you found what works for you. So what do you want to do with that?
Like long term?
Well, we could talk long term. We could talk short term. I'm kind of more interested in about your personal fulfillment than the actual goals of the company. So like you talked about learning Chinese. That sounds like, I don't know you very well, but I don't want to say it's an excuse, but it's like, you can go learn Chinese just by going to move into the interior somewhere and hanging out for a year. You'll learn Chinese like that. You know, you have enough of it. You'll be HSK6 by, you know, a year if you just do that. So there's got to be something else that's motivating you to do these other things. If you really want to learn Chinese, you're just going to go live in Ningxia province for a year, you know? So like, what are you trying to do here?
I don't know. I mean, now when people ask me like, oh, are you going to leave China? What are your plans? I'm like, I started this company with my friend. Like, I'm not going anywhere. Like, I kind of want to see where it goes and what we do with it. Like,
yeah.
So now I'm like married to this. Well, I don't want to say I'm married to the company, but it's like me and my partner have created this child baby that is this company and I can't just abandon it.
So my analogy in the beginning was totally right. That's exactly what China is like for you. You had a fling with this guy and it was great. And then you got pregnant. Now you're stuck with it.
Pretty much.
Well, that's great. No, I don't disparage that at all. And I didn't mean to, you know, to try to push it too hard there. But, you know, you talked about I'm learning how to, you know, I'm figuring out how to do social media and I figured out how to do Photoshop. And it sounds like you're learning all this stuff and doing all this stuff. And it's stuff that you discovered here that maybe you wouldn't have discovered back home. Yeah. And I'm wondering, and I guess the next question that comes to mind is, well, what does that make you feel about the fact that you live overseas? You know, is that a more of an anchor to being here as opposed to going back?
I mean, I always like think, when am I going to go back? I have absolutely no idea. Like I used to put a date on it. I think everyone's done that. Like, oh, 4 years, and, you know, that passes. And then you're like, I really don't know. Because like I said before, I had a whole plan. I'm going to major in Chinese, not major. I was going to do a master's in Chinese, get some type of interpretation degree and go back to the U.S. and live a, you know, a normal life with a picket fence and garden and all of that stuff. And
overrated.
Yeah, I'm sure. And I'm still here. So I have no idea. Like if I were to go back, I would probably still continue to do what I've learned. I just take what I've learned and hopefully find a way that I can make an income in the States, because I do know social media can be pretty profitable if you do it well enough. So I could dabble and and see if that works. I mean, you have 16-year-olds who are making millions of dollars selling makeup on YouTube.
So. And also affecting elections in other countries. That's how they do that.
Yeah, that as well, I'm sure.
Well, I got to tell you, I think what you're doing is very exciting. I mean, I've been involved. You're involved with Vegans of Shanghai. There's a similar group, not affiliated, called Vegans of Beijing that I was involved with in the beginning. And I think it's exciting to be involved in the market here, and it's very addicting. And I think the work you're doing is really great. I mean, I see what you're doing from afar, and it makes me feel good when I see someone like you who maybe didn't expect to be an expat, found themselves here, and was able to take their passion, meld it with what they were kind of doing to get by, and all of a sudden, it's like what they're doing now. It's like, that's what it is. It's awesome. And it's something that people talk about, the American dream. There's a China dream. I think there's an expat dream.
Yeah.
I think you're living the dream. I really appreciate you coming in. Thank you so much, Shanice. I won't keep you any later. I know it's a late night tonight. And keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, there you have it. Please check out the show notes for links to more information about my guest and to reach out with questions, feedback, and interview suggestions. Don't forget to subscribe and to leave us a like on your favorite podcatcher. Migratory Patterns is a production of Migration Media and is executive produced by me. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.